There's a bit of sad news this week. Tributes have been pouring in Marlborough for wartime codebreaker Harry Beckoff, who died last Sunday, age 101. Harry Beckoff, who lived in Castle Court retirement apartments in River Park, grew up in Bristol, attending Fairfield Grammar School and studying at Bristol University. He was a colonel in the Intelligence Corps and a codebreaker at Bletchley Park during the Second World War. And the reason I mention the demise of poor old Harry is because he came onto this show several times, even when he was 98 years old. A couple of years he did one of our Christmas news reviews, which was quite interesting. He's very decided. He was very much against the European Union, so it would be interesting to see what Gary Hopkins has got to say after we hear a bit from Harry. But let's go back to that interview a couple of years ago now and hear from Harry Beckoff, who it describes how he first went to Germany and how at the course he was doing in German at Bristol University, he was awarded his degree by none other than Winston Churchill. Martin, just tell us a little bit about Harry, because you met him, I know, didn't you?
Well, he was very intelligent. He was the oldest living member of the Conservative Party. So he joined the Conservative Party in the
'40s. The longest serving
yes,
member.
He
joined when he was 15 years old.
Yeah, he was very anti-European Union, but a very interesting gentleman with a lot of unorthodox views. You wouldn't think of him, you know, he wasn't a knee-jerk of any kind, was he?
No. The other thing that Harry's quite famous for is he was one of the people that has been making quite a big fuss about a certain chap called Martin Bormann, who he believed had got all the sort of the keys to the Nazi bank accounts, took them out of Germany right at the very end of the war with the aid of M Section, MI6, Ian Fleming and people like that, and got them squirreled over to South America, and actually created a kind of financial empire from the proceeds of all the looting of Europe in World War II.
Yeah, well, that's all covered in Paul Manning's book, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. And also, there's another very important book about these issues by
Christopher Crichton. His actual real name is John Ainsworth Davies.
Yeah, John Ainsworth Davies. That's why I mentioned John Ainsworth, which is called Operation JB, which is about the operation to spring Martin Bormann out of Germany at the end of the war, carried out by a very secret section of MI6. You know, this linkages between the Nazi intelligence structure and the setting up of NATO are still with us. If you look at linkages between the far-right groups in the Ukraine, for example, at the minute, working with NATO intelligence services on various nefarious plots and plans.
Well, I hope we can hear from Harry now as he describes his first trip to Germany while he was studying here at Bristol University.
I chose to go to Freiburg in the Black Forest because it looked very tempting to me. And I went there in 1933 and witnessed the arrival of Hitler into power. And I saw his Nazi armies. I saw some of the lecturers in the university get dressed in Nazi uniform. That's why I spent more time in the Black Forest than I did in the university. But I witnessed things like burning of books in the marketplace. I saw some dreadful things in Germany. I met many people who were begging me to help them get out of the country. Not a very easy thing to do for a penniless student. And so when I came back to England, I went back to my university, and the Chancellor happened to be a gentleman with the name of Winston Churchill. And Churchill handed me my first degree, and I told him I'd just come back from Germany, and he said, "We'll have a chat afterwards." And that's how I got to know Churchill, and he explained to me what was going on. I learned more in depth in a few meetings with Churchill than I had in the time I'd spent in Germany. So I knew what he was going through, and I knew the problems which faced us. He was put into power. Hitler had no money, had managed to reach the rank of Lance Corporal and corporal in the German army, though he was Austrian birth, was latterly put in prison, had no money whatsoever, started up this sort of League of Brigands in southern Germany, but there was no money available. However, the powers that be, who came from the Illuminati and were the richest people in the world, beginning with the Rothschilds, whose history needs a complete book in itself, decided that Hitler was the man they were going to put in place in Germany. Part of their plans for the recrudescence of the whole of Europe and in fact of the world. That's how he came into power. He had no great education, he had no great knowledge, he had no money, he came from poor parents, his trade was painting, decorating, but he was out of work and in prison for ages. So how does a man like that suddenly vault into power as the prime minister of a country whose great general is just dying?
Yeah, so how did Hitler get into power so quickly? Martin, what Harry's saying there is the thing that surprised them as intelligence officers during the war and after the war was that, Hitler had such a very fast rise to power from almost nothing, and there seemed to be a lot of money behind what he was doing.
Well, the Communist Party in Germany at the time and the left were very strong, and of course the industrialists and the bourgeoisie, for want of a better word, were very scared of a revolution. So they thought they could use Hitler to crush the communists, which he did. But then, of course, he to some extent, he then took control of the situation. Very similar to the way Vladimir Putin came to power in Russia, because he was brought to power by the oligarchy to defeat the communists. He defeated the communists, although they're still in contention. And then, of course, he double-crossed the oligarchy that brought him to power. But, of course, these are very murky waters, and we still live in a times run by oligarchic politics.
And the other thing about Harry was that the first David Cameron as Prime Minister, the first party conference, Harry was there and he got a standing ovation, the entire party, Conservative Party, clapping and cheering. I haven't heard a lot from them actually commemorating his life. Now he's dead. But anyway, there's the most fascinating thing, was it one of the things anyway about Harry, or the thousands of fascinating things about him really, was that he was actually there in Berlin at the Hitler bunker when the war finally finished in the beginning of May 1945. And here he talks about that, and he certainly wasn't convinced that Hitler died, which is quite an interesting thing. He saw the bit of tarpaulin, but he wasn't allowed to touch anything, and so he was rather worried that Hitler had been somehow spirited away somewhere. Anyway, he was much more worried, though, about Martin Bormann and the bank account, so let's hear about that now.
Some of the leaders of the Nazis were quite aware by the end of 1943 that they were going to face defeat. They began planning immediately. Hitler, for instance, had a right-hand man, and he told him to prepare for recrudescence, for rebirth of the Nazi Party after the war.
That's Martin Bormann, Harry, isn't it?
And he was a very shrewd, clever operator. In fact, he pretended to be killed when we attacked Berlin, and Hitler committed suicide. And I saw what reputed to be his body outside his bunker. He was the man who was given the job of getting all the leading Nazis possible out of Germany with all their plunder. And remember, they had plunder in not billions, trillions, as much gold, silver and jewels as they could steal from all the Jews they killed off, from all the other organizations and countries they plundered. Every country they went into, they plundered everything, including beautiful portraits, wonderful jewelry, gold, silver. They had a tremendous fortune, which they smuggled out of Germany, it is said, with the help of the Pope of that time, who helped them with what were called rat lines. Out they went in thousands, all over the world, including Mexico, South America. They established new businesses in different countries, which produced salient profits. They set up their own headquarters of an international office and kept in touch with what was going on in Germany. And that's written in my book on Germany. So, by one means or another, and they were very clever at it, with the help of organizations like IG Farben, who have an American setup, they produced all the poison drugs to kill off the Jews. They had tremendous fortunes, and they helped all these leading Nazis out of Germany and into jobs.
The voice of Harry Bekoff there. But I will say, he wasn't just talking about the war. He also had some pretty strong views about the modern world. And can you just sum up the sort of Harry view of the world? I mean, it's not one that everyone agrees with, but I mean, this, it's quite fascinating to have had the insight of chatting with somebody, and I'll put the links on to those old programmes on our show page at thisweek.org.uk, to someone who was actually around in the 1930s, visited Germany and saw Hitler's rise to power, saw the book burning and this kind of thing. It's almost something that's been completely forgotten today.
Well, and also he served with distinction in the Second World War as an intelligence officer, and I think his views in later life, from my point of view, is very, very Eurosceptic, to the point of completely dismissing the European Union as anything other than a fraud. But then that's not uncommon in the Tory party, let's face it. And in other ways, he was a very, very interesting gentleman, and someone who will be sorely missed.